Hamlet, Hamlet, wherefore art thou Hamlet?
Psst, it's not Hamlet. My name is Romeo.
Oh, no problem. Romeo, Romeo, where fart thou, Romeo? Was that better?
Let me not to the marriage of true minds admit impediments, but this one thing I know, that while love generally alters not when it alteration finds, I'm afraid in this case your Romeo must go.
Oh, farting is such sweet sorrow. Will thee be back tomorrow?
For the record, I'm not farting, I'm parting. I'm heading over to KPFT, where the fall fund drive is starting.
How can I ever find thee again? Pray speak, my love, before it's too late.
It's easy. Just pick up thy phone and dial 713-526-5738.
Soft, let me get a pen. What's that again?
713-526-5738. Good evening. I'm Warren Holloman. This is So What's Your Story on 90.1 FM KPFT. And in case you didn't get that very, very subtle hint, we're in the middle of our fall fund drive. We're 100% public radio, and your donations are literally the only way we can stay on the air. Each week, Hank, Greg, Mary, Tatiana, and I bring you remarkable storytellers who take us on captivating journeys and then return us safely home, telling stories that not only entertain us, but also teach us who we are and what we believe and what values we hold dear. And three times each year, we ask for your support. Please give us a call at 713-526-5738. Our steadfast volunteers are here, and we'll thank you on the air. Calling is best because if you're one of the first two callers to donate $200 or more, we'll reward you with theater tickets to your choice of shows that tonight's guests are starring in. You can get tickets to Heaven Can't Wait, which will be performed on November 3rd, or to your choice of any upcoming production at the Ensemble Theater. If you'd rather donate online, you can do that at www.kpft.org. Just be sure to indicate that you're designating our show, So What's Your Story? Either way, whether you donate by phone or online, you can take satisfaction in knowing that you did your part to keep public radio and live storytelling on the air. And speaking of live storytelling, tonight we're stealing shamelessly from Shakespeare and calling this show The Play's the Thing. The first half of the show is about a church that on November 3rd will become a musical theater. And the second half of our show will be about a theater and also a beauty parlor that in many important ways are very similar to a church. Let's begin with some stories from this remarkable church. It's Bering Memorial United Methodist Church, located just a few blocks from the KPFT studio. This year, the church is celebrating its 170th birthday, and they're celebrating by putting on a play. It's a musical, actually, called Heaven Can't Wait, and it's the creation of Houston playwright Fernando Dovalina, who's here in the studio tonight, along with Bering's pastor, Reverend Diane McGehee. Fernando, Diane, welcome to So What's Your Story.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Thanks for having us.
170 years. You must be old.
We are. As a matter of fact, we were founded in 1848, just a decade after Houston was founded. We're one of the oldest churches in the city.
Wow. Well, one of the things I like about Bering is the way the church has opened its doors to the Montrose community. Unlike so many churches that decided to move outside the loop during the flight to the suburbs in the 60s and 70s and 80s. Diane, tell us the amazing story about the pastor who was sent by the Methodist Conference to close the church, and he just couldn't bring himself to do it.
It really is an amazing story. His name is Reverend Don Sinclair, and he's actually going to be at the play on the 3rd as well as at the worship service on the following day on Sunday the 4th. So Reverend Sinclair was sent by appointment, that's how it happens in the United Methodist Church, to Bering Memorial United Methodist Church to close it because that was 1986, And as it happened throughout much of Houston, a lot of the population had left the inner city area and moved out to the suburbs, particularly to the west, and so had a large part of the congregation that had been at Baring Memorial in Montrose. And the church was $70,000 in debt, and that's a lot of money even now, but then it was even more. And because that was not because the church wasn't doing wonderful things in the community, but because so much of its financial base had gone with those who had moved out, it was in desperate straits. And so Reverend Sinclair arrived at Baring, and what he found was this inclusive, passionate community that was committed to working in the Montrose community, the city of Houston, to help people. And that remarkably, as early as 1960, the church had opened its doors to the gay LGBTQ community that was present in Montrose at the time. And we may remember that at about that time in Houston, about 20% of the LGBTQ community lived in the Montrose area. And of course, that was a time when a lot of churches, the government, many, many people were not welcoming. As a matter of fact, were judgmental and very harsh with the LGBTQ community. So for a church at that time, as that early, to actually have fully embraced the community, welcomed them in, they were becoming leaders in the church, was an astounding thing. So Don Sinclair arrives in 1986 and sees this passionate community, this inclusive community that is really struggling. It has two buildings on its property that are now empty. And as he laughingly would say, we couldn't even afford to dust them. But he was convinced at what he saw that this community really mattered and that there had to be a way. And so he gathers the leaders of the community together and he asks them two questions. And the first question he asks is, does the God of history need a church on the corner of Mulberry and Herald in Montrose today? Mm-hmm. And the resounding response of the leaders was yes. And so the second question he asked them was, why? And every single person said, because of AIDS. So at that time, some of us will remember that AIDS was at its height. People were dying. People were suffering. But the government, for the most part, had turned its back on the community, wasn't responding. Churches weren't responding. Doctors and dentists and other medical providers were terrified and weren't touching AIDS patients or helping them. And this community, this church said, we're going to do something. We're going to use those two buildings. We don't have a penny to spend. We're in debt. But this is a community that needs us. And so on faith, they stepped out. There were some dentists. Ed Cordray was the leading dentist that led this movement. There were some dentists in the congregation. There were some medical folks. And they said, we're going to open a dental clinic. We're going to start treating those with AIDS who need dental help that nobody else is willing to care for. They opened a daycare center because what was happening was people who had partners who had AIDS or family members who had AIDS had to go to work. They had no place for them to be cared for. Nobody would take them. So Baring opened a daycare center in the other building so that people would have a safe place to bring their loved one. They'd be cared for all day. They'd be fed. They'd be safe. And then they could go to work and come back. And so with nothing, they stepped out in faith. They got volunteers. And then they went out in the community and started asking for help. And the Houston community responded. Medical personnel, dental, the government came to learn, came to help, and they led the way in treating AIDS patients and caring for AIDS patients in Houston. And so the other piece of that that's remarkable is that in most Methodist churches, you don't have communion, the Eucharist, Lord's Supper, as different folks call it in different denominations every Sunday. You have it once a month. But the reality at Baring at the time was that many people who were suffering from AIDS, their families had abandoned them. They wouldn't come see them. They wouldn't care for them. If they died, no one would claim the body. And so Baring just welcomed all of those folks in, and they started having communion every Sunday because people were literally dying from week to week, and they wanted them to have the opportunity to have that grace-filled sacrament. And Baring was doing as many three or four funerals a week at one time, but it was because they wanted everyone to have a funeral with dignity, with compassion, to be sure that they were buried properly, and to care for the family and friends who were grieving. Many people lost their whole social network, including their families. So it's a remarkable place that has in their DNA this deep compassion for caring for people who are in need and for stepping up when there's a need that nobody else is addressing.
And you're still doing that.
Yes, we are. We're still caring for people with AIDS. It's changed in terms of the care people need, but people still need that. And then in this political environment, we're needing it more and more. We are also taking care of immigrants. We are reaching out to the immigrant population. We're advocating for them. We're trying to help provide services and care for them, because there's another population that now is being maligned, is being labeled as unwelcome and unacceptable, and is in great need. And so once again, Bering is stepping out there. We're caring for foster families. We have a homeless ministry to young adults who are on the street and are having children and need a place that's safe so that they're not trafficked, so that they're able to eventually acquire stable housing, and we're working with them. And so this has been in this church's DNA since its beginning, and it's an awesome place to be.
If you're just tuning in, this is So What's Your Story on 90.1 FM KPFT Houston. You can catch us on 89.5 in Galveston, 91.9 in Huntsville, and online at www.kpft.org. And just a little subtle reminder, we're still in the middle of our fall fun drive, 713-526-5738. Diane, how would you characterize Bering Methodist in terms of her personality as a church and in terms of her role in Houston's history?
So the personality is one of welcome. Literally anyone is welcome there. We have people from all different backgrounds, people of all different sexual orientations and gender identities. We have people from all different ethnicities. And we start every worship service with that, with sharing that everyone is not only welcome here, they're celebrated, and are very specific about that. So whether you're documented or undocumented, whether you're gay or straight or transgender or lesbian or bisexual, whether you're tall or short, deep or wide, whoever you are, you're welcome there. And that's the DNA of that church. And so it's an exciting place to be. And the other question you asked me was...
In terms of Houston's history, I know, for example, during the influenza epidemic a century ago, the church played a key role.
Yeah, so actually, when the church was formed in 1848, it was formed by German immigrants, creating a place for immigrants that at that time weren't welcome. And so here we are
again. German-speaking immigrants.
That's right, German-speaking immigrants. And nobody wanted to include them because they didn't speak the language, because people were afraid of them. And so just like today, we're welcoming the Hispanic and Muslim refugees and immigrants and others who are not being welcomed to other places. But they've also stepped up to the plate when there's been needs in Houston. So there was an influenza outbreak, yellow fever outbreak. Bering stepped up and led the way for that. There was a time when homelessness was not being addressed. We helped, actually, were part of partner churches that started SEARCH. And actually, at one time, when there was such a great need, no place to care for the homeless population, we set up tents in our parking lot and actually housed the homeless there. And so over and over again, Bering has stepped up when there's been a need in the city of Houston. And then, of course, when AIDS came, we were the leaders in that as well.
Right. So to celebrate this 170th birthday and to tell your story to the Houston community, you've decided, like Hamlet, that the play's the thing. You collaborated with Houston playwright Fernando Dovalina to present a play that would tell a story that would reflect what your church is all about. So let me bring in Fernando here and introduce him to our listeners. Those who are longtime readers of the Houston Chronicle will recognize his name, because for many years he was an editor there. In fact, two international reporting projects he supervised and edited were finalists for the Pulitzer Prize. Before that, he was a reporter and, I believe, a columnist with the Fort Worth Star-Telegram.
Correct.
And he even did a stint of teaching journalism at UT Austin. But like so many of us, I'm speaking about myself now, Fernando, what he really wanted to do was to be an artist. And write plays. So he took an early retirement, and he's been very successful. His works include a musical called The Gospel According to Tammy Faye, a drama about Mexican-American life called Mexicans, Cycle of Life, Love, and Death, and another drama titled American Homefront. And about 10 days from now, he'll premiere his latest musical, Heaven Can't Wait. Fernando, I'd like to ask, how did Diane cajole you into writing a play for a church?
Well, I was having a hospital procedure in June, and Diane came to visit me and my husband, who's a member of the church. I was under sedation and half out of it, and that's when Diane extorted me into writing this play. When I came out of sedation, I said, I did what? Okay, Warren, I deal in fiction now, and that's my fake news story. The real story is that while I was waiting to be sedated, Diane told me of her desire to have a fundraiser for the church's missions, all of which I believe in wholeheartedly. She thought I might have some important showbiz, I might know some important showbiz people who would be willing to do the show, but I don't. I did, however, have this idea for a play, and she has a very gifted congregation, and we could bring in additional actors, and that's how it came about. I had started a romantic comedy several years ago and never got beyond the first two pages. The characters in my play and the play itself needed a reason for existing, and Diane had just given it to me. So I finished the first draft in a week.
Wow.
That's incredible. So how do you write a play about a church's mission and not sound kind of preachy?
Well, I used the plot to achieve that, and I hope I did it successfully. In my story, the church is putting on a show to celebrate its 170th birthday. Mm-hmm. Four actors are on the way to the show rehearsal and become involved in a car accident on the Southwest Freeway. So it's very Houston.
Yeah.
Their fates are unknown, to the fictional character, the fictional director of the show, and her assistant, Judy. The assistant doesn't think it would be proper to continue with the show. The director has other thoughts, that the church needs to meet its challenges head on, and that the show always must go on. So sort of church and theater meet.
So even the worst adversity became an opportunity for this church and this group of people.
Yeah, and if I may, I'd like to read it. This is our friend and actor Debbie Hirsch will be reading this. It's just not available today, so I'm going to do the honor. So she talks to her assistant, Judy. Judy, when this church encountered the yellow fever epidemic in the early part of the 20th century, it ministered to the sick. And when the AIDS epidemic hit Houston's gay community, this church went to work again. We ministered to the hungry and the homeless, and our members keep the sick company and take them to their medical appointments. We have many support groups, too, for those in grief, for those fighting addiction, for those dealing with cancer, for those recovering from Harvey, for those caring for foster and adopted children, for those in fear of deportation and family separation, and for LGBTQ people who need a safe and loving spiritual home that celebrates their identity as a gift from God. The money raised by this benefit will support all those ministries. This church has never taken the easy way out. We will do the same thing with your friends. We will take care of them. And Judy, we're going to do a show. In the meantime, how about some thoughts and prayers for your friends? Thoughts and prayers actually mean something around here. But at Bearing, we back them up with action.
That's so powerful, coupled with the story Diane told about Reverend Sinclair, who basically did that. It was like a musical where he said, no, we're going to make the show must go on. We're
that's
gonna,
right.
That's incredible. Right. Now, I know you're not a theologian, but you do a little bit of theology here. The show is set in heaven. So could you tell us about your what the actors find when they go to heaven?
Well, I think most people who believe in heaven want it to fit their lives and their love. So for Houston baseball fans, for instance, it would be a continuous baseball season where the Astros actually end up in the World Series and win it all. Mm-hmm. And so for the four actors in my play, heaven is a place where they can put on a show they've always wanted to do, and they proceed to do just that.
And what's one of the lessons that the actors learn when they go to heaven?
The four actors are not couples, but only because they haven't told each other how they feel about each other. One of them, Tomas, meets Elvis at a bar in heaven. Yes, mm-hmm. There's a bar in heaven. And the king tells them to tell Maria how he feels before it's too late. And it's just not romantic love, he says. When was the last time you told your mom and dad you love them? Elvis is just one of several show business legends that the actors meet in heaven.
I've always said that here in the South, we have the king and the king of kings. And I'm not sure which is more important sometimes. But, you've got them both. And what other people do they meet in heaven other than Elvis?
Well, this show features impersonators and some really fine impersonators who can channel famous people. On Earth, there are Carol Channing and Grace Slick. In heaven, there's Elvis, Ethel Merman, and Patsy Cline. You know, those five impersonators alone are worth the price of the ticket.
And anything else about the musical you'd like our audience to know?
You know what? I love that the people involved in this show are so diverse. They are Anglo, Latino, and African American. They are straight, lesbian, and gay. They are of all religions and no religion. And Warren, Shades of Shakespeare, we have a man playing a woman and a woman playing a man.
That sounds great. I can't wait. I've already got my tickets. So
great.
If somebody's listening and they want to get tickets, where do they go? What do they do? And when is it? And where is it?
So it's November 3rd, Saturday night, 7:30 at Baring Memorial United Methodist Church, 1440 Herald Street, Houston. That's in Montrose. They can call the church office at 713-526-1017 and reserve a place, purchase a ticket. They can also give them an online link where they can go online and purchase the ticket, and we can put their name down so that be sure that they have a seat.
Online at the church website?
Yes, they can go on the church website, which is baring.com, www.baringumc.com.
UMC, United Methodist
yes.
Church. Okay,
yeah.
Great. BaringUMC.com. Great. It's going to be a great show. And also, you can make a $200 donation to public radio.
That's right.
Tonight, and you get two free tickets.
That's right.
Now, we've got just a quick minute. I'd like to bring this full circle. And I've got a playwright and I've got a pastor sitting side by side. And I want to know, church and theater, I guess I was raised thinking, being taught they were strange bedfellows. And I hear you saying that they're a marriage made in heaven. Is that right?
I think that's right, because at the core of the Christian message is a story. It's a story about God's love for God's people. It's a story about a God who comes and walks among us, becomes one of us, so that we can taste, touch, feel, see, smell what God is like. And that's what theater does. It makes the story come alive. Also, the original stories of the gospel of Jesus were not written down. They were told orally. And so the oral tradition of having an audience and telling the story in a way that the audience was engaged and could actually participate and have their imagination stimulated was the way the original story of Jesus was told. So theater does that same kind of thing. And so to use theater to actually bring stories alive and to engage an audience is exactly what God does in the story of Jesus. Comes to us in a way that engages us, that helps us come alive, that helps us to see and taste and touch what God is like and to see each other in that way and to stimulate our imagination. So I think it's a perfect match.
Diane, Fernando, I can't wait to see your show. And as I said, I've got my tickets. I'm looking forward to being inspired, to laughing, and hearing some great music as well. I know you've got a rehearsal to go to, but I want to thank you for coming in tonight and being on the show.
Thank you so much. This is going to be so, we're going to have not only great theater, but it's going to be so much fun. You're going to meet some awesome people if you come. So come out and join us and you'll have a great time.
I'll point out that this is a very funny show, judging from the actors' reaction. After many rehearsals, they're still laughing.
Oh, wonderful. I know it's going to be funny if you wrote it. It's going to be great.
Thank you.
Let's check in with Hank now and see how the fall fun drive is going. Hank?
Well, Warren, the fall fun drive is going terrible, and that's really ironic because we have such fabulous stories. We're not hearing any phones out there, and I need people to realize that if they love the stories that they hear, not just the magnificent ones tonight about Baring Church, which is really an icon of tolerance and a pillar of community responsiveness, as our tellers made very clear, but this is a program that is exclusively listener-sponsored, and that means that we can't leave it to the next guy. You know, when Lewis Hill designed Pacifica in 1948, it came from the peace movement. He was a journalist who believed that radio shouldn't be filtered, it shouldn't be distorted, it shouldn't have any kind of corporate sponsorship. And that's what we're all about. There's only four Pacificas left in the country, ours in Berkeley, New York, and Washington, D.C., and ours is doing just fine, but we need help from our listeners. In 2008, when I was a guest on this show, it wasn't So What's Your Story, it was an open journal, which meant that anything would really go. And I remember when I left that show as a guest a few days later, our program director called me and asked if I wanted to host the show because whoever did it left. She had to leave, and I said, well, I certainly hope that wasn't me. He assured me it wasn't. He said, you can do whatever you want. And I said, well, I want to do a show about storytelling. And he said, well, Hank, that's a great idea, but don't expect a whole lot of interest. Well, he was wrong, Warren. We all know he was wrong. We went from a 1 hour every Friday, the last Friday of the month for 3 years to doing it weekly on Monday morning at 6:00. And then at 10 o'clock, when you joined us on Thursday nights, and now we're at absolute prime time on Wednesday at 8:00. But I can't make it clear enough how people need to realize that without listener sponsorship, this program cannot continue as well as any other program on KPFT. You can go up and down the dial. You're not going to hear DJs drop needles on better tunes. You're not going to hear programs that are better than this. This is all about live storytelling. I've had a woman on years ago who told for the very first time the murder of her daughter. I've had students on who've told stories for the first time because no one else had given them a chance to do so. I had a person on who talked about seeing his father for the first time. And that's just the beginning. We have trajectories and jubilation and tragedies and all kinds of things going on. We've had 487 stories told, Warren, since 2008. Wow. I counted them yesterday, knowing full well that you'd be asking me to talk a little bit about that tonight. That is community radio incarnate. That is exactly what community radio is all about. And we're the only program originating in Houston devoted entirely to storytelling. No one tunes in and says, what a terrible job, because they're volunteer programmers. What do you expect? Our listeners expect to hear the best, and they get it. But we need your help. 713-526-5738, JAM KPFT. We have got Bill Ecker out there waiting for us in Pledge Center. Bill is of Wild Bill and Vinyl Avenger fame, the program that followed us for so many years. And he's out there helping and waiting to hear those calls. If you don't want to use the phone, get online at kpft.org. Go to donations. Tell us how you want to pay. And then scroll, please, to So What's Your Story? It's a program that you want to support. But please go online. Get in line. I don't care if you're out of line. We don't even care if you're in a lineup. We just want you to get online, give us a call. The amount doesn't matter. It's demonstrating interest, because when we don't get any calls, the leaders of KPFT don't hear any interest. We have to hear the calls to get the interest, folks. So, 713-526-5738. Please.
Thank
you. Call in with your donations, please. Thank you, Warren.
Thank you, Hank. We'll check back in with you at the end of the hour and give folks time to make that call. And while they're dialing the phone, I'm going to ask Tatiana to tell us what's coming up in the Houston Storytelling Calendar.
Now it's my time to shine.
You go, girl.
So let's start with our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild, because it's a great place to learn about the art of telling. They meet the fourth Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at Temple Emanuel, located at 1500 Sunset. And be sure to visit the Guild's website at www.houstonstorytellers.org for information about our events like Telebration held on November 17th. And while you're checking things out on the Guild's page, listen to some of our past So What's Your Story programs. Every show since 2008. How many shows? Do we have 487 stories?
Something like that.
And all are listed on the menu under radio program. And don't forget about our friends at The Moth, Dazzling Stories at Warehouse Live, the second Tuesday of every month. Next Story Slam is November 12th, and the theme is Beginnings. You'll hear stories about everything from new relationships to new jobs to even new puppies. Stories about pulling up roots and putting on a fresh coat of paint.
Thank you.
Yeah, and speaking of Beginnings, Tatiana is beginning to get upset at me because I'm talking back here in the booth, getting excited about life. And I wanted to remind everybody, a $200 donation will get them two tickets to Heaven Can't Wait on November 3rd. That is Saturday, November 3rd at Bering Methodist Church, or two tickets to any upcoming production at the Ensemble Theater, which is at 3535 Main Street. And believe me, $200 is a bargain for these productions. So please, 713-526-5738, JAMKPFT. Thank you, Warren.
You can support public radio, and you can see a great show. Thank you, guys. If you're just tuning in, this is Warren Holloman, and this is So What's Your Story? Our theme tonight is The Play's the Thing. And in the first half, you heard stories about how a church decided to tell its story through theater, producing a fun and, at serious at the same time, musical called Heaven Can't Wait. Now, for the second half of the show, we're going to feature the work of the Ensemble Theater, which, like so many theaters, tells stories that are so inspirational and so meaningful that some Saturday nights when I go there, I kind of feel like I don't even need to go to church the next day. I'm joined tonight by three Ensemble Theater artists. Rachel Dixon, who's no stranger to this show, wears many hats in the Houston theater community. She's president of Houston Scriptwriters. She taught theater and communication at just about every college in Houston. She's a founder and artistic director of Driven Theater Company, and she's artistic associate of the Ensemble Theater. Regina Hearn is a singer and an actress, and you're going to hear some of her singing and acting in just a minute, who has performed in numerous Ensemble main stage shows, including last month's production of Da Kink in My Hair. And Curtis Vaughn is an actor who has appeared on stage, television shows, movies, and TV commercials, and you're going to get a sampling of his work as well. Rachel, Regina, Curtis, welcome to So What's Your Story?
Hello. Thank you, Warren.
Thank you for,
having us. It's a pleasure to be here. Mm-hmm.
We're delighted you're here. In a few minutes, I'd like you to tell our listeners about the upcoming shows at the Ensemble, but first, let's take some time and talk about the show that just wrapped up, Da Kink in My Hair by Trey Anthony. Could you give our listeners a brief recap of the show, what it's about, and maybe even what it's really all about?
So I can tell you a little bit about what it's about. A salon set in New York, Brooklyn, and we get to meet all of these fabulous women who need their hair done, but is that really what they come into the salon for? So, Regina, what was it really about since you were in it, yeah?
Well, basically, the show definitely revolves around Novelette, who is the hairstylist, and it is her salon, and she has the innate ability to sense the issues and things that are going on with her clients just through the touch of their hair. And so what the playwright, Trey Anthony, has done is presented Black women and the prevalent plights that we face all around the world and in our lives and things like that. So you get a chance to hear the stories, see them evolve and heal and go to the next level in their healing.
And what's amazing is the stories are not just about Black women. It's women, the things women face in this lifetime, which was Trey Anthony's calling, was to present her story and, in essence, the universal story of women.
Right. And you get to see the faces of these women and what they do and how they experience these things that happen to them in their lives.
So, tell us about some of those women.
Well, you have one woman named Sherelle, and she is an executive type character who does a lot of different things for everyone else. But you find out that she doesn't really take care of herself. So her issue is that she ends up dying off and becoming a ghost among the people that she knows and her friends and family, because they don't realize that she has taken on this burden and it has affected her in this way.
And one of the women, tying in with Baring, who was on the show earlier, she is a movie star and she's supposed to have a man. But we learn
that
she has a woman. She's a lesbian and she is happy, but she's got to find that space for herself. Now, of course, my favorite character, not favorite, but I really appreciated the story about the little girl, because you could see how she was empowered at the end of her monologue. She,
that's Stacey Ann. And she is from Jamaica, and so her mom comes ahead of her and her little sister, and she ends up marrying her husband, Mr. Brown. And so when Stacey Ann and her sister come to America, they end up living with their mom and their new stepdad, and you see the issue of molestation that she faces and how it affects her and why she does not want to say anything. But you can see through Novelette's touch and just her care and her ability to soothe what's going on and sense what's going on and soothe it, you can see how Stacey Ann transforms and becomes empowered.
As do all of the women. They take it back by the end of their hair.
right.
And then there's one more very authentic woman named Patsy.
Yes, Sister Patsy.
Yeah.
So Sister Patsy is the character that I played. And I love Sister Patsy because Sister Patsy is so me. That is definitely one of the things that I discovered in my development of that role, and just taking in and embracing her reality made me see my reality as well, how they mirrored. So that was really, really
she's
great.
A sister of the church?
A sister of the church. And of course, she is married. However, she has lost a son. She's lost a child. And as many do, they become stuck in a place where they blame themselves and they live in a place of guilt. And they don't, you know, tend to move forward and begin to live life again. However, she goes to a doctor's appointment and finds out that she is now pregnant with a second son. And so in her visit to Novelette and to the salon, she realizes that this is her second chance to live again.
Could you share her story with our audience?
Absolutely.
Okay, we're prepared. Let's go.
Awesome. You know, yesterday, I had my first ultrasound. And when I found out that it was a boy, I cried. Me, a mother again. And it just made me think about you, Romy. You know, Romy used to say, "Mom, you worry too much. Ain't nothing ever gonna happen to me." And then he would smile, that slow-moving, easy smile that crept across his beautiful face. Oh, and those eyes, eyes full of mischief, eyes that always told me that child was up to something, you know, like sneaking four cookies instead of two and changing that C minus on his report card to some messed up looking A. And sneaking in the house at 2 a.m. when he knew his behind was supposed to be home by 12:30. You know, that child had me fooled for a while, changing back all the clocks in the house, and me not even knowing he was late, until I showed up for church one Sunday morning and found out that I had missed an entire hour and a half of Sunday service. Yes, I did. And Pastor Thomas, well, he wasn't looking too impressed with me rolling into church late. Ooh, and Sister Rosemary, a huffing and a puffing because I had missed my choir solo. And Sister April, she had to sing it. And everybody knows she's stone deaf. Oh, listen, you know, the only reason why she's in the choir is because she and Pastor Thomas, well, they got a little something going on. Oh, yes, the flesh is weak, child. And that boy making me miss my choir solo, was I ever mad? Ooh, you know, that day, I tell you that I prayed to the Lord to give me strength to deal with that boy. And when I got home, some divine intervention got inside me. And I cut up his behind. Yes, I did. God bless the child. 6'3". Real tall, you know. But I still wasn't afraid to give him something. I would say, Jerome. You know, I would call him Jerome when I get serious or I got something really, really important to say. Otherwise, he was just Romy. My Romy. Oh, and I remember that night. I said, Jerome, I don't have a good feeling about this. Why don't you and Damien just watch some movies and I'll order some pizza and you boys can just stay in. Oh, you know, the streets aren't safe for young boys. Oh, and well, Romy, he just rolled his eyes and he smiled that slow-moving, easy smile. And he said, Mom, you worry too much. Ain't nothing ever going to happen to me. And besides, Mom, we're not going to be on the street. We're going to a school dance. And Mom, you know Deanna Stewart's going to be there. And you know I got a thing for Deanna Stewart. He said, Mom, I'm going to show her my dance moves, and she's going to be all mine. Lord have mercy. Poor Deanna Stewart having that child step all over her feet. And we just laughed. Just laughed and laughed. And, well, before I knew it, Damien's at the front door honking the horn and Romy's racing down the front step. And I said, Jerome, be careful. And he says, Oh, Mom, I'll be home by 12:30. And I said, Now, listen, you better be home by 12 a.m. And, well, that's all I said to him. He was gone. Be home by 12. And he was gone. And I'm real mad with myself, you know, because I should have said, wear your brown coat, Romy. It's a much warmer coat, but I let him leave wearing a gray coat, and that's not a real warm coat. I should have said, baby, I love you. And I should have listened to that rotting feeling in my gut. And I should have begged him to stay, you know. Oh, stay home, Romy. Oh, but I didn't. I should have said, wear your brown coat, Romy, because it's a real warm coat. Because Damien said he was laying on the ground, you know, the cold, hard ground. And maybe if he was just wearing his brown coat, maybe the coat would have kept him, you know, just maybe. But brown coats don't protect little black boys from 5 bullets, do they? Oh, because Damien said they were in the parking lot, and Romy and Deanna was talking and laughing 1 minute, and then the next, Romy fell to the ground. And everybody started running, and by the time the police came, the only two people that was left there was Damien and Romy. And Damien said he took off his jacket and he laid it on Romy to keep him warm. Oh, at the funeral, I thanked him for that, you know, for trying to keep my baby warm. No one knows who did it, and no one knows why. There are no witnesses. Nearly 200 kids in a parking lot, and no one saw anything? Oh, but somebody shot Romy. Somebody shot him 5 times. 5 times, and my baby is gone because they killed him. They can do that, you know. Your son can kill my son just because. I don't know, maybe because he didn't like the color of his jacket, or maybe because it was for some sort of disrespect, but they are killing each other. And the police say they're doing everything they can, but how much is my son's life worth when they continue to be hunted and shot down? Ooh. Coming from the corner store, you're dead. Going to a school dance, you're dead. Pulled over by the police and you dead. How many black boys need to die before they do something? Or maybe somebody just needs to post a sign that says, "Warning, black boys in danger of becoming extinct." How come they just can't grow up to be black men? And so I think about you, Romy. You are always with me in my heart, in my heart. Your memory holds me, comforts and enfolds me in my heart, in my heart. I feel your spirit beside me, your presence feels and guides me. New life within me, but I'll hold your memory in my heart.
Mm. Well done.
We don't usually clap on the radio. You spoke to our hearts here.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
The sad news is that this show has come and gone.
It has.
But there are about 5 or so other shows you can see at the ensemble that are coming up.
Yes, yes.
And I'd like to ask Rachel if she can give us
Sure. So the next thing we have coming up is a bluesy, jazzy version of Scrooge, the Scrooge story. So Christmas is Coming Uptown opens in a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. We have Too Heavy for Your Pockets, which speaks about the civil rights movement. That's coming up in February. Frida Peoples, which takes us back to church in May. And it is about everybody has their blemish, and yet we keep going. And that's Frida Peoples. Then Pipeline is the piece that opens in May. And it is about a mother's desire to keep her child on the path, despite what the rest of the world says about the pipeline from school to prison. And then Josephine Tonight is about a biographical look at Josephine's life.
Ah, yes. Mm-hmm.
And where do we get tickets? How do we get tickets?
Oh, yes. You can call the ensemble, 713-520-0055. Or 713-520-0055.
Okay.
Yeah. Or you can go online at ensemblehouston.com. EnsembleHouston.com.
And I just did that a few days ago, and it's easy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And speaking of Pipeline, where is the Ensemble Theater located?
Oh, yes. It's at 3535 Main Street, right in the heart of what's now called Midtown.
Yeah.
So we're right near you, actually.
You've got your own train stop.
Yes, we do. Ensemble HCC. So no one has a reason. They got to come on down to us.
And speaking of Pipeline, we're getting a little short on time, so I'm going to bring Curtis back on in right now because I want him to talk about that show in particular, and if he will, to present one of the stories from that show. Curtis?
Thank you, Warren. If you don't mind, I'm going to go ahead and dive into the monologue.
Yeah, and then if we've got a minute, we'll chat about it.
Absolutely.
Okay. Wonderful.
This particular monologue is about the son, Omori. He's in high school, and his mother teaches in the inner city, in the community, and his dad doesn't want him to be a part of the inner city, so he pays to send him to a private school. His parents aren't together, so this is a particular monologue that he's speaking to his father, where he's speaking to his father.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I was sitting in class, listening to the lesson. Was going to be a silent observer. Was talking about Native son. I'd woke up that day thinking about you. Hadn't seen or talked to you in weeks, but the check came on time. I woke up with that check in my hands and had a feeling about that. Like I didn't know what to say, but I wanted to say something to you. I called you, but you didn't answer. So I went to class. I'm sitting there listening to the class talk about Native son. About the character Bigger Thomas and who he was and what led him to act out of rage. Teacher kept saying he was unleashed. I kept thinking, animal. And we discussing this Bigger Thomas. Discussing the circumstances and where he comes from and this and that. Single mother, bad guy brought up. One of the students said he only had his mother. And I'm sitting there listening to this. On a day where I woke up with you on my mind, and I tried to call you, tell you I had this feeling about getting these checks, tell you I hadn't seen you in a minute, wondering where you'd been, but you didn't answer your phone. So I sat there, listening to single mother, poor, angry animal, Black Thomas. And when the teacher come asking me what I thought, I felt like he was saying something to me. Like he knew I was sitting there thinking about you. Feeling single mother, poor, angry animal, Bigger Thomas-like. And he started saying, Mr. Joseph, what made Bigger Thomas do that to that girl? What were his social limitations? What made the animal in him explode? And he looking at me, but also through me. And I say, I don't want to talk about it. Because all I'm thinking about is you. And how I haven't talked to you in weeks. But I get this check on time. Like it's automated. Like the bank sends it to me. All I wanted to know is if you even mail it. Like, is it even personal? Or is it just robotic routine responsibility? And I'm thinking, who does that? What kind of man just sends checks and calls that fatherhood? And we talking Bigger Thomas this and single mother and the limitations and animals exploding and I do not call on me. I don't have an answer. And he keep pushing me and pushing me. And I stand up to walk out because I feel the room getting small and I'm becoming Bigger Thomas. And even when I hate this part of the story and the teacher get in my way, tells me to sit down, grabs me, like you do when you grab my arm trying to play daddy all of a sudden, when it's convenient for you. And I push him. throw him like he was a monkey hanging on my back, like he was you. And I'm wishing it was you. I'm wishing I could throw him again, pound his face into the ground, rip that check up and say void. But it wasn't you. It wasn't you I pushed. It was my teacher. But I wish it was you. I wished it was you so bad I had to pee. I almost peed on myself right there in front of the class. And I don't know if that is hate or a love or something else I was feeling, but I know why Bigger Thomas did what he did. And I hate that I know. But you, I hate more. You, I hate most of all.
Oh, my.
Yeah, so.
Wow.
You know, this play really hits home for me because it's something that I can relate to. It's something that a lot of my friends that grew up in the inner city can relate to, being in single-parent households.
Yeah.
You know, and angry and having this void, this hole in our heart that's not complete, you know, because that father figure wasn't there, you know. And even though this young man has his father in his life, he doesn't have him in his life. He has his money in his life.
Yeah.
But he wants his father in his life. You know, he's already going, his father sent him to this private school so he can be afforded opportunities to make it outside of his community. And that's about as much as his father does, you know. So now you take this young man, you take him out of what's familiar to him. Mm-hmm. You put him in this environment where he feels that he's not appreciated. He's not loved, respected. And, you know, that's the explosion that happens.
Mm-hmm. Curtis, thank you.
Thank you for having us.
That was so riveting. It's hard to believe we're out of time. Our listeners, you've heard the quality of theater that we've got here in Houston. And for a $200 donation, we'll give you two tickets to the Ensemble Theater, to Heaven Can't Wait. A big thank you to Curtis and to Regina, to Rachel.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Warren.
Thank you.
You've shared stories about churches and theaters and hair salons even that are making a difference in our city. And you've introduced us to the way that theater serves as a rich medium for storytelling and the way that theater can be therapeutic, that it can heal. Thank you for being on the show.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Now, next week is our Halloween show, and Greg will be the host. So let me just warn you, his guest will be ghosts. Don't you dare move, because the cool new Flash Gordon Parks is up next. Make 90.1 a part of every day, and while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling, join us every Wednesday at 8 p.m. for So What's Your Story, and treasure what you hear. You keep loving great stories, and we'll keep bringing them to you. This is Warren, and along with the rest of the So What's Your Story team, we never want you to forget that it's never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.